Chapter 33. 2. When I was a Sunday school scholar, something more than 60 years ago, I became interested in Satan, and wanted to find out all I could about him. I began to ask questions, but my class teacher, Mr. Barclay, the stonemason, was reluctant about answering them, it seemed to me. I was anxious to be praised for turning my thoughts to serious subjects, when there wasn't another boy in the village who could be hired to do such a thing. I was greatly interested in the incident of Eve and the serpent, and thought Eve's calmness was perfectly noble. I asked Mr. Barclay if he had ever heard of another woman who, being approached by a serpent, would not excuse herself and break for the nearest timber. He did not answer my question, but rebuked me for inquiring into matters above my age and comprehension. I will say for Mr. Barclay that he was willing to tell me the facts of Satan's history, but he stopped there. He wouldn't allow any discussion of them. In the course of time we exhausted the facts. There were only 5 or 6 of them. You could set them all down on a visiting card. I was disappointed. I had been meditating a biography, and was grieved to find that there were no materials. I said as much, with the tears running down. Mr. Barclay's sympathy and compassion were aroused, for he was a most kind and gentle-spirited man, and he patted me on the head, and cheered me up by saying there was a whole vast ocean of materials. I can still feel the happy thrill which these blessed words shot through me. Then he began to bail out that ocean's riches for my encouragement and joy. Like this. It was conjectured, though not established, that Satan was originally an angel in heaven, that he fell, that he rebelled, and brought on a war, that he was defeated, and banished to perdition. Also, we have reason to believe that later he did so and so, that we are warranted in supposing that at a subsequent time he traveled extensively, seeking whom he might devour, that a couple of centuries afterward, as tradition instructs us, he took up the cruel trade of tempting people to their ruin, with vast and fearful results, that by and by, as the probabilities seem to indicate, he may have done certain things, he might have done certain other things, he must have done still other things. And so on and so on. We set down the 5 known facts by themselves on a piece of paper, and numbered it age 1. Then on 1500 other pieces of paper we set down the conjectures, and oppositions, and apes, and erhopses, and outlesses, and numers, and uses, and probabilities, and likelihoods, and ye are permitted to thinks, and ye are warranted in believings, and dight have beens, and old have beens, and dust have beens, and unquestionablys, and without a shadow of doubt, and behold. Materials? Why, we had enough to build a biography of Shakespeare. Yet he made me put away my pen. He would not let me write the history of Satan. Why? Because, as he said, he had suspicions, that my attitude in the matter was not reverent, and that a person must be reverent when writing about the sacred characters. He said anyone who spoke flippantly of Satan would be frowned upon by the religious world, and also be brought to account. I assured him, in earnest and sincere words, that he had wholly misconceived my attitude, that I had the highest respect for Satan, and that my reverence for him equaled, and possibly even exceeded, that of any member of the church. I said it wounded me deeply, to perceive by his words, that he thought I would make fun of Satan, and deride him, laugh at him, scoff at him, whereas in truth I had never thought of such a thing, but had only a warm desire, to make fun of those others and laugh at them. Had others? I, the supposers, the perhapsers, the might-have-beeners, the could-have-beeners, the must-have-beeners, the without a shadow of doubters, the we are warranted and believingers, and all that funny crop of solemn architects who have taken a good solid foundation of 5 indisputable and unimportant facts, and built upon it a conjectural Satan 30 miles high. What did Mr. Barclay do then? Was he disarmed? Was he silenced? No. He was shocked. He was so shocked that he visibly shuddered. He said the satanic traditioners and perhapsers and conjecturers were themselves sacred. As sacred as their work. So sacred that Woso ventured to mock them, or make fun of their work, could not afterward enter any respectable house, even by the back door. How true were his words, and how wise. How fortunate it would have been for me, if I had heeded them. But I was young, I was but 7 years of age, and vain, foolish, and anxious to attract attention. I wrote the biography, and have never been in a respectable house since. 3. How curious and interesting is the parallel as far as poverty of biographical details is concerned between Satan and Shakespeare. It is wonderful, it is unique, it stands quite alone, there is nothing resembling it in history, nothing resembling it in romance, nothing approaching it even in tradition. How sublime is their position, and how overtopping, how sky-reaching, how supreme the two great unknowns, the two illustrious conjecturabilities. They are the best-known unknown persons that have ever drawn breath upon the planet. For the instruction of the ignorant I will make a list now, of those details of Shakespeare's history which are facts, verified facts, established facts, undisputed facts. Facts, he was born on the 23rd of April, 1564. Of good farmer class parents who could not read, could not write, could not sign their names. At Stratford, a small back settlement which in that day was shabby and unclean, and densely illiterate. Of the 19 important men charged with the government of the town, 13 had to ache their mark in attesting important documents, because they could not write their names. Of the first 18 years of his life nothing is known. They are a blank. On the 27th of November, 1582, William Shakespeare took out a license to Mary Ann Whateley. Next day William Shakespeare took out a license to Mary Ann Hathaway. She was 8 years his senior. William Shakespeare married Ann Hathaway. In a hurry. By grace of a reluctantly granted dispensation there was but one publication of the banns. Within 6 months the first child was born. About 2 blank years followed, during which period nothing at all happened to Shakespeare, so far as anybody knows. Then came twins, 1585. February. 2 blank years follow. Then, 1587, he makes a 10-year visit to London, leaving the family behind. 5 blank years follow. During this period nothing happened to him, as far as anybody actually knows. Then, 1592, there is mention of him as an actor. Next year, 1593, his name appears in the official list of players. Next year, 1594, he played before the Queen. A detail of no consequence. Other obscurities did it every year of the 40-5 of her reign, and remained obscure. 3 pretty full years follow, full of play acting. Then, in 1597 he bought New Plus, Stratford. 13 or 14 busy years follow, years in which he accumulated money, and also reputation as actor and manager. Meantime his name, liberally and variously spelt, had become associated with a number of great plays and poems, as, ostensibly, author of the same. Some of these, in these years and later, were pirated, but he made no protest. Then, 1610-11, he returned to Stratford, and settled down for good and all, and busied himself in lending money, trading in tithes, trading in land and houses, shirking a debt of 41 shillings, borrowed by his wife during his long desertion of his family, suing debtors for shillings and coppers, being sued himself for shillings and coppers, and acting as confederate to a neighbor who tried to rob the town of its rights, in a certain common, and did not succeed. He lived 5 or 6 years, till 1616, in the joy of these elevated pursuits. Then he made a will, and signed each of its 3 pages with his name. A thoroughgoing businessman's will. It named in minute detail every item of property he owned in the world, houses, lands, sword, silver gilt bowl, and so on all the way down to his Eakin best bed and its furniture. It carefully and calculatingly distributed his riches among the members of his family, overlooking no individual of it. Not even his wife. The wife he had been enabled to marry in a hurry by urgent grace of a special dispensation, before he was 19. The wife whom he had left husbandless so many years. The wife who had had to borrow 41 shillings in her need, and which the lender was never able to collect of the prosperous husband, but died at last with the money still lacking. No, even this wife was remembered in Shakespeare's will. He left her that Eakin best bed. And not another thing, not even a penny, to bless her lucky widowhood with. It was eminently and conspicuously a businessman's will, not a poet's. It mentioned not a single book. Books were much more precious than swords and silver gilt bowls, and second best beds in those days, and when a departing person owned one he gave it a high place in his will. The will mentioned not a play, not a poem, not an unfinished literary work, not a scrap of manuscript of any kind. Many poets have died poor, but this is the only one in history that has died this poor. The others all left literary remains behind. Also a book. Maybe two. If Shakespeare had owned a dog, but we not go into that. We know he would have mentioned it in his will. If a good dog, Susanna would have got it. If an inferior one, his wife would have got a downer interest in it. I wish he had had a dog, just so we could see how painstakingly he would have divided that dog among the family, in his careful business way. He signed the will in three places. In earlier years he signed two other official documents. These five signatures still exist. There are no other specimens of his penmanship in existence. Not a line. Was he prejudiced against the art? His granddaughter, whom he loved, was 8 years old when he died, yet as he had had no teaching, he left no provision for her education, although he was rich, and in her mature womanhood she couldn't write, and couldn't tell her husband's manuscript from anybody else's, she thought it was Shakespeare's. When Shakespeare died in Stratford, it was not an event. It made no more stir in England than the death of any other forgotten theater actor would have made. Nobody came down from London. There were no lamenting poems, no eulogies, no national tears. There was merely silence, and nothing more. A striking contrast with what happened when Ben Jonson, and Francis Bacon, and Spencer, and Raleigh, and the other distinguished literary folk of Shakespeare's time passed from life. No praiseful voice was lifted for the lost Bard of Avon. Even Ben Jonson waited 7 years before he lifted his. So far as anybody actually knows and can prove, Shakespeare of Stratford on Avon never wrote a play in his life. So far as anyone knows, he received only one letter during his life. So far as anyone knows and can prove, Shakespeare of Stratford wrote only one poem during his life. This one is authentic. He did write that one, a fact which stands undisputed. He wrote the whole of it. He wrote the whole of it out of his own head. He commanded that this work of art be engraved upon his tomb, and he was obeyed. There it abides to this day. This is it. Good friend, for Isis' sake forbear to dig the dust enclosed here. Blessed be ye man it spares thes stones, and cursed be he it moves my bones. In the list, as above set down, will be found every positively known fact of Shakespeare's life, lean and meager as the invoice is. Beyond these details we know not a thing about him. All the rest of his vast history, as furnished by the biographers, is built up, course upon course, of guesses, inferences, theories, conjectures, an Eiffel Tower of artificialities rising sky high from a very flat and very thin foundation of inconsequential facts. IV conjectures, the historians oppose that Shakespeare attended the free school in Stratford from the time he was 7 years old till he was 13. There is no evidence in existence that he ever went to school at all. The historians infer that he got his Latin in that school, the school which they oppose he attended. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.